Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Well, in the pro-life movement, the news is never an unqualified good. It's often a mixture of good and bad. We got a little bit of that in two issues that have raised recently in news coverage of the abortion issue. One of them, of course, widely reported that abortions have been dropping and have dropped to their lowest rate since the 1970s. That is, at least in that narrow sense, good news. There's another one that says, you know, the attempts for the advocates of life to curtail abortions by requiring ultrasound before abortion seem to be failing, not stopping women from having abortions. We'll deal with both the good and the bad. Sarah Foster joins us on this Monday afternoon, February the 3rd. She's president of Feminists for Life, based in Washington, D.C. Sarah, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate you having us on again.
Dealing with the issue of the dropping and lowest abortion rate since the 1970s from the Guttmacher Institute that tracks these things, is this all good news?
Well, as you said, it's kind of a mixed report. For one thing, they don't know if they have all the information. They have a big caveat at the end of the report. But if true, I still don't think I'm prepared to celebrate over a million abortions a year, over a million times that a woman either lays her body down because of the lack of resources and support available to her or swallows a bitter pill that they call choice. It's a reflection that we have not met the needs of women. So we're far from giving ourselves an A rating.
What exactly is the Guttmacher Institute reporting about the abortion rate?
Well, they're talking about it's the lowest rate. You know, for the past couple years, there's been a downward trend in the rate of abortions. And so from an all-time high of 1.6 million now to 1,058,000 abortions, it's a substantial drop. But there's a lot of reasons that they're not including in the analysis of why women are not seeking abortions. There's many things there are in there, but there's some things that are not, including the attention made to the resources and support for women on college campuses, which is Feminists for Life's primary work, or in the workplace. Something else FFL has advocated widely, that we look to the culture to change the reasons that drive women to abortion, that we should be listening to women, in particular parents, who have a high rate of abortions. 61% of all abortions in this country are performed on mothers of born children. And it's a reflection of issues of poverty. Over 69% of abortions are performed on those who are poor, the working poor, those in college who have no economic independence from their parents. So these are all huge issues. Most women, 3 out of 4 women, say that they have abortions because they don't have the work, the resources, and support on college campus or within society or from their family and community. And this is something that has been our focus. So have our efforts in part helped to lower the abortion rate? I think so. I think that the women deserve a better message. It continues to be saturated within this culture. Even those who don't want to make abortion illegal believe that women they know, women they care about, deserve better than abortion. And people are privately and at the Pregnancy Resource Center level all working towards systematically eliminating the reasons that drive women to abortion.
So other than the message, what do you think other contributing factors have given us kind of the general decline and then the more precipitous decline lately in the number of abortions?
In the first 10 years of Feminists for Life's college outreach program, abortion declined by college-educated women by a whopping 30%. Now, they haven't continued looking at the statistics in the exact same way since then, but we can see that this is one part of the equation. And I think the other part of the equation is that there are so many pregnancy care centers who are out there getting to people, getting the information before they're in a state of crisis, let's say. And that includes to people who are married, you know, who have just lost their jobs and lost their income. They're better able, I think, now to reach out to them, to get help to them immediately. And we have to do that, both on the college campus and on within the community. We have to reach people before they get to this to the point where they're in a crisis. So there's many factors that may be relating to this report, but again, we're not sure that all the numbers are there, and they say this at the end. We're not sure that it has dropped this significantly. And even if it's true, over a million abortions a year is still a failing grade.
Now, kind of in the dark lining of the silver cloud, so to speak, National Public Radio reports on the same report, but they do say that the proportion of so-called medication abortions, that's what they're calling, you said swallowing the bitter pill as opposed to a surgical abortion, that proportion's changing. The surgical abortions seem to be overtaken by the various medicinal ways that abortion is induced. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that both are cruel things to do to a woman, whether it is to have her undergo surgery or for her to sit there and see, not be visibly separated by a sheet, but for her to see her, you know, the embryo or the newly forming fetus, human being, whatever it is, it's their, whatever you want to call it in Latin, it's still their son or daughter that they're seeing, you know, as it's expelled from her body. It's a very difficult and gruesome thing. And, you know, the groups like Project Rachel's Vineyard, and people who do post-abortion counseling across the country have to increasingly be prepared to take on that sort of post-abortion regret and seeing this. This is a terrible thing for a woman to do. It sounds like an easy solution, but women who have undergone this know that it's not. And in some cases, it has resulted in death of the woman. And I don't think people on either side are looking for that to happen.
The other thing I wanted your reaction to was a story at the end of the month that reported that despite the best efforts legally of pro-life movement to try and get an ultrasound before an abortion, in those places where this has been required, women, well, they're reporting 98.4% who required or had an ultrasound before an abortion still went through with the abortion. Do you think this particular avenue has proven unfruitful?
Well, you know, it's interesting to me and I am not a pregnancy center director, but from what I know from those who have gone to the pregnancy resource centers, most women who walk into pregnancy resource centers pretty much have made a decision of what they'd like to do, which is to have a baby. You're not going to Planned Parenthood because you want a baby, and you're not going to a pregnancy resource center because you want to have an abortion. People have made a decision, a preliminary decision, before they get there. And so what happens in a pregnancy resource center oftentimes is confirmation, you know, and bonding. But more importantly, it's the fact that the pregnancy resource centers are able to problem solve, whereas, you know, an abortion center, all they're going to do is take Visa and MasterCard and give her some Kleenex. Basically, I mean, they're not going to usually sit there and tell her about WIC and food stamps and legal issues for her with her boyfriend if he's threatening to withhold child support, et cetera. The pregnancy care center, they are available to are going to help her go through the available maze of resources on and off campus or on and off on and around her community or workplace, this sort of thing. So when somebody goes to Planned Parenthood and they have an ultrasound, you know, an abortion provider does this during an abortion. People have talked about it and complained about it being invasive, but abortion providers need to do this, and I put little quotation marks around the word need, in order to make sure that every part of the unborn child is removed from her so that she does not have a serious infection and risk her life afterwards. So, you know, the other interesting things about ultrasound is that when the father of the child goes to a pregnancy care center and sees the image of his son or daughter, it is a stunning time for men. They report their experience as being very powerful, whereas a woman feels and understands that she is pregnant when she gets that pregnancy test results, and she understands the gravity of this. Many times men don't have that same bonding experience until they see this, human being, a recognizable human being on a screen, and it becomes incredibly real and a powerful image for him. And this is important because it, you know, this is a child that they both conceived, and they and for him to have this experience is a good thing, and makes him probably a better father as part of this whole, you know, as looking forward to being a parent or making a decision about being a birth parent. Adoption is another thing that's not really talked about in this report, and I always want to make sure that we remember, as one of our speakers, Jessica O'Connor Pett, says, adoption is an empowering option for women, and we all need to talk about this more. When we talk about abortion, we also have to talk about the fact that in addition to marital and single parenting options, there's also kinship care and guardianship options, and there are open, closed, and semi-open adoptions that we, the pro-life community, are for nonviolent solutions. Feminist for Life has been promoting the resources to support nonviolent solutions. And I want to thank you for constantly talking about this on your show, Todd.
Before we let you go, we always want to ask you this question, because this is really at the heart of what you do. Is abortion pro-woman? About 30 seconds, Saren.
We refuse to choose between sacrificing our children, our families, and our education and career plans. We refuse to terminate our education or terminate our children because of the lack of societal supports. Women deserve better than abortion. We continue the tradition of the early American feminists who opposed abortion, and I encourage people to go to feministforlife.org to get more information and see how they can participate in helping us to envision a much better world that includes everyone. Men, women who've had abortions, our children, and yes, women who deserve better than abortion.
Saren Foster, president of Feminists for Life, based in Washington, D.C. You can find out more about Feminists for Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Saren, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss Lutheran support for the pro-life movement. Dr. Peter Scheer, who has proven, in addition to his many responsibilities as a former pastor to Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, to be quite an outspoken and knowledgeable voice for life in the Lutheran Church. Dr. Peter Scheer of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest tomorrow. Also, we're going to have a conversation that we had planned to have before the end of the year, but had to put off for health reasons until now at the beginning of the year. Bishop John Shelby Spong, who's been a guest on our program before, has written a new book called Jesus the Jewish Mystic from John's Gospel. We're going to be talking about his theory, his latest theory, about who Jesus really was. John Shelby Spong will be on the show tomorrow. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Cradled in historic Perry County, Missouri, the manger of the Missouri Synod, Emmanuel Lutheran Church at 453 Northwest Street in Perryville proclaims God's Word and celebrates His Supper on Saturdays at 5:30 and Sundays at 7:30 and 10 using the church's liturgy contained in Lutheran Service Book, enriched with ancient and modern hymns. For more information, call 573-547-8317 or visit www.emmanuel-perryville.org.